Welcome back to the Dialogue Studio. This podcast series is hosted by the Ikeda Center for Peace, Learning, and Dialogue. In it, we explore the transformational practice of dialogue and why it is important, especially in this current moment. In these episodes, you will hear from individuals from all walks of life sharing what dialogue means to them and how they are practicing it in their daily lives. We will also introduce our founder, Daisaku Ikeda's philosophy of dialogue and the various approaches and strategies we practice here at the center. Hello, everyone. Thanks for tuning in to the Dialogue Studio today. I'm so excited for this episode because my colleagues Henri and Priyandra are joining me again, and I always learn so much from our dialogues. Some of our listeners may know this already, but we recently concluded our virtual Dialogue Night series since we will be transitioning back to in-person events soon. At the event, we talked about dialogue as the path to a hopeful future and what kind of ingredients are necessary for genuine dialogue. We had such a profound discussion with youth from different parts of the world, and it inspired us to dig a little deeper into the theme. In this episode, I asked Henri and Pri what their ingredients are and what happens when our ingredients are different than others. We also unpacked some of Mr. Ikeda's key ingredients for dialogue and the impact genuine dialogue can have on our society today that seems to be more divided than ever. Our conversation gave me so much hope, so I hope it offers you some food for thought as well. Let's jump in. Hello, Henri and Pri. Thank you both so much for being here today. I think this will be your third time joining us in the Dialogue Studio. So welcome back. And I'm so excited to have another wonderful conversation with you both. And even though we all work together, I always feel like I learn something new in each of our conversations. So it's just always such a great reminder of the importance of like setting aside time for dialogue, even with people that we're really close with. So today, I thought we could start out with a question that was inspired by our last episode with Kim and Saloni, which you both supported behind the scenes. And we called that episode Dialogue as a Path for Growth. So I was curious if you've both had a dialogue recently that you felt helped you to grow as a person.
Thank you, Lillian. I love this question. It's interesting because I feel like a lot of my dialogues have helped me grow, but once I really started thinking about which one has really made this huge impact on me, I found it a lot harder to answer. Although I feel like I do learn a lot from every dialogue that I have. But so one that I wanted to share today was actually one with one of my best friends. I've known her for so many years, but you know, due to like our work schedules and other things going on in our lives, we don't often have a chance to, like you said, get together and really sit down and talk. And so recently I was really struggling with something in my personal life. And it got to the point where I felt like I didn't know what to do or how to move forward in my life. And I was able to just reach out to her one day. I wasn't like planning, you know, to say like, hey, can we talk? But I ended up just reaching out to her. And it wasn't so much the content of the conversation, but being able to talk to her and just share how I was feeling relieved so much of the weight that I was carrying. And then also what was interesting was, you know, as she listened to me, she really offered a perspective that I hadn't seen when I was just in my head thinking about it. So that really helped me to see that, you know, I can't solve all of the problems in my head on my own. And it is so important to reach out. And she was able to kind of help guide me to figure out what I needed to do. And then what was great was a week or two later, you know, she also reached out to me about like a burden she was carrying. And I thought that was so interesting because, you know, when we do open up our own lives, the people around us also kind of, you know, respond to that. And so that was a great reminder for me that, oh, I'm not the only one that's, you know, struggling. And if I share, then other people will be more open too. So even though she was a close friend, I felt like I really learned a lot from just having that dialogue.
That's awesome. Thank you, Henri. reminds me of Saloni sharing how she has like one or two friends that she knows she can always go to, and then how it pushes her to try to be that person for her friends too when they reach out. So that's such a great point about sometimes I feel like we don't reach out because we feel like people are either too busy or maybe like they don't care or they're not thinking about us. But actually, yeah, by us reaching out, sometimes we are surprised like how much people need us in their lives too. So that's really beautiful. Thank you for sharing.
Yeah, thank you so much, Henri, for sharing that. It just really made me think about how during these past 2 years of this pandemic, I do feel like I've had more dialogues that do help me grow in the sense that I'm actually engaging in them as opposed to surface level conversations that are also important, I think, for the social element of things. But, you know, the really profound dialogues that I think I didn't realize I wasn't having pre-pandemic, I'm having now. But when I thought about the ones that I've been having recently, the one that popped out to me the most are the conversations that I have with my dad. I would say this is kind of like a sustained dialogue that began 5 years ago. I grew up in a divorced household. So my parents divorced when I was about 5 years old, I'd like to say. And fortunately, I'm super, super grateful that, you know, no parent was absent, but I did primarily live with my mom. And so a lot of my shaping or becoming really was informed by, you know, having my mom as a confidant and such. And then fast forward, she passed away 5 years ago. And I feel like that's really where she kind of baton passed this opportunity for my dad and I to kind of become a confidant to each other. And through the dialogues I've had with him and really understanding kind of where he was at in his life and getting a better understanding of, you know, just the challenges of what it is to be an adult, you know, be just another human being who's trying to navigate life. And just like through my conversations with him, which have required a lot of courage and understanding on both of our parts, I felt my life expand in a way that, you know, I wasn't one really, I guess, anticipating. Like, I always loved my dad. My dad always loved me. But I think the kinds of dialogues we've been having more consistently and especially in these past 5 years have allowed me to see him with a lot more kindness. I think the sustained dialogue that I'm having with my dad is really giving me hope that even if, you know, we have characteristics that keep us, you know, keep us from feeling like we can really change, that if we continue to have conversations with the hope that we can always come back to them or learn something new, or both about ourselves and the other person, that there is always something that you take coming out of it. And yeah, I think the biggest one for my dad and I is we've just gotten to know each other at a whole new level. And yeah, it's just been helping me grow a lot as I navigate my mid-20s, which lately I've been feeling like I'm kind of in a quarter-life crisis too. So kind of getting my dad's perspective on that has been really helpful. Yeah, I was a bit all over the place. But thank you, Dad. Shout out to Pops.
Thank you, Pri's dad. I will say, Pri, that your evolving or developing or growing relationship with your dad has really inspired me over the years to call my dad more. So I do call him like once a week on my way to work because of the time difference. And I just continue to be inspired by like how joyful it is to talk to our dads, you know, because of just you sharing like the times you've really challenged yourself. And yeah, at our recent virtual dialogue nights, many people express how they find it really difficult to have dialogues with their family members. So I think probably many people listening can understand the determination and challenge you made to deepen this relationship with your dad through dialogue and how it's not always easy. So I'm sure that encouraged a lot of people already. So thank you both for sharing. And yeah, I was thinking about mine too, and many came to mind, but one that I didn't really think of as a dialogue kind of stood out for some reason. So at the beginning of the year, a friend and I decided to have like a weekly check-in. But we don't really have an agenda other than like some things that we usually have to talk about. And it's interesting because it's been sort of us like telling each other about ourselves, like, oh, I'm like this, or this is how I've been struggling, or I'm just this way. It's just been sort of like unloading our struggles to each other. But the interesting thing about this is that every time we meet and I share something with her or she shares something with me, the response from the other person is always like, that's crazy. You're amazing. Or that's insane. I always think I want to be more like you. Like we just, it's like always this, it reminds me just of both Cam and Saloni mentioned this, just how deluded we can be about ourselves and how convinced we can be about who we are and like, you know, what we can do. And then to be able to talk with somebody, then having them sort of call you out on that and share a totally different perspective of yourself is, yeah, it just every week we're always like, oh my gosh, just the way we see each other or the way we see ourselves is so different than how others see us. So it's almost like every week I know if I go to this meeting, I can transform some part of, you know, my suffering that's based on my own negativity or perception of myself. So I look forward to those calls every week. So thank you, friend. So I know, you know, recently we had this interesting conversation at work about how dialogue can be transformative, but it can also be harmful, you know, if one party isn't committed to engaging in the same way as the other. And in that case, like, is it still a dialogue? And for us, you know, of course, Mr. Ikeda's philosophy is always grounded in the idea that through dialogue, we can bring forth, you know, our best selves. And which led us to think, you know, if there are conditions that need to be met in order for genuine dialogue to take place, and if both parties need to be aware of the conditions, our requirements. And we even posed this question to youth at our recent virtual dialogue nights. We asked them, you know, what are the necessary ingredients for having genuine dialogue? And so I was curious, Henri and Pri, what those are for you, like what are the sort of top ingredients that you need to have genuine dialogue?
As I was thinking about my top three, it was hard to narrow it down to top three because sometimes they feel like interrelated to, for example, like courage and vulnerability can go together because it takes courage to be vulnerable. But anyway, I tried to narrow it down and courage was definitely the first one that comes to mind for me, especially because I feel like it's something that I have to continually challenge. Sometimes when things come up and I feel like, oh, I wish I could say how I'm feeling, a lot of times my fear prevents me from bringing up the courage to even engage in that dialogue. So for me, one of the top was courage, just to be able to push oneself to share openly how we feel and to enter the dialogue space or ask for a space to be able to dialogue. And then the second one for me was engagement. So once, you know, we're in the dialogue space, it's important that each of us come into the space really willing to engage with the other person. That includes like body language, listening, sharing like thoughtful responses, and then respect was taught for me as well, just to be able to, yeah, treat the other person with respect and to be able to see them as someone that you're willing to engage with. So
I love those. Thanks, Henri. Similarly, my first ingredient is courage as well. And wow. I was just thinking about the other themes, kind of like what goes hand in hand with courage. And similar to vulnerability, for me, it's compassion. Like I need to really be courageous to have compassion, which doesn't always look like me sugarcoating something that I need to articulate, when sometimes honesty might sting a little. I hope it doesn't hurt, but I think to be honest, sometimes the person receiving your honesty might not always take it in the most comfortable way. And so I think, yes, for me to have courage, it will help me have compassion both for myself and the other person, to trust that what I have to say and what I hope to be able to hear from the other person can really lead to the expansion of both of our lives, as opposed to one, you know, dominating what they think is right versus wrong and whatnot, and to really just be able to share a space where it's like, I'm going to be honest with you, and I hope you can be honest with me, and just know that we're doing this in a very safe way. So yes, courage, because it's the two sides of the same coin with compassion. And then my second one is having a vast heart. And I say this because anytime I don't want to have a dialogue, it's oftentimes because my life is closed off to the other person, whether it's like, oh, they hurt my feelings. Like, why do I want to make room to hear what they have to say when this is how I feel? And I don't know how I can compose myself in front of that person. But when I really think about dialogues where I've been able to challenge that essentially fear of being like judged or misunderstood for articulating my how I feel, whether good or bad, it varies based on how open my heart is. And when my heart is open, when it's vast, I have more confidence, I have more strength and even wisdom and optimism to be able to be like, this is how I want to be seen and heard. And I hope in me demonstrating that, that you too can feel that you can just share your heart openly with me. And in doing that, I feel like we can just create value and strive together in a very holistic and healing way. And then the third one I have is hope, which I think goes hand in hand with trust. So like Mr. Ikeda says, which I think this is a quote I've mentioned all three times that I've been on this podcast. You know, he says, hope is a decision. And I really feel like if I can go into a space of dialogue with this decision of no matter what, I'm going to come out of this dialogue a better person or learning something new, then there always is hope, even if there's no like dialogue number two, or even if I leave a space feeling like, oh, I wish I had said these other things. As long as I step in with hope, I know I've decided that there is a potential for good experiences to come out of it. And it also gives me the resolve to just pursue more conversations unrelentingly, because there's always this belief that this conversation is going to help our lives in some way. Yes, courage, fast heart, and hope are my three ingredients.
Wow. I love those. And I really love yours too, Henri. I had some questions when I was listening to you both. Henri, when you were sharing, the question I had was, because one of your ingredients was engagement, right? Like to feel engaged with the other person. So the question I had when you were sharing was if you've had experiences where, you know, maybe your ingredients were much stronger or more present than maybe it was in the other person's life. And if you still felt it was a meaningful dialogue, even if maybe you were the person who embodied the ingredients more than the other person, and how you navigated that. And then listening to you, Pri, I was thinking what happens when like two people have different ingredients, and how do we honor both ingredients? So I was even thinking, oh, we should have a, you know, dialogue nights where we put our ingredients like on a name tag or something, and then people can see, oh, you care about this and this and this. And I wonder how that would change people's interactions, or if they would just overthink like, oh, am I, you know, being courageous right now or compassionate? But I just, yeah, it's just so interesting to think about. So I was wondering if you both had thoughts about those two questions or other things.
In response to your question, Lillian, I was just thinking, if I was in a dialogue with someone who had the opposite of my ingredients, so the opposite of a vast heart would be closed heart or closed-mindedness, the opposite of hope would be despair, and then the opposite of courage would be, I guess, cowardice. And I can see how that would definitely be a challenging dialogue, in the sense that to even get to a dialogue, I'm sure would be a process, whether it's like, I would need to be ready to know that this first encounter is not going to necessarily be the dialogue that allows both of us to step out of it feeling different. So I think acknowledging that, like, that I'm going to need to be ready to engage again and to have the courage to do that. That's where my ingredient, I think it's important for me to hold true to that, so that I can be ready for whatever comes out of my situation with this person who has completely different ingredients than me. But then with despair too, I feel like even when I reflect on my own experiences of despair, I feel despair because I've either isolated myself or kept myself away from my relationships with other people in ways that have made me forget how much hope there is. And so if I come in with hope, I would like to hope that I'm kind of giving them perspective that I'm sure won't fully manifest until they've interacted with more people who are hopeful or, you know, really experienced moments in which they themselves felt hope. But the thought of if I can even be that one person to be like, this can be real if you believe it, or, you know, this can be real if I, with my own life, through consistency, show that this is a decision I can make, then I would like to imagine that, again, I'm sure it would have to be a sustained dialogue, but that they would come out of that a little more hopeful than when they entered a space with me. And then the vast heart piece, when I think of all the times I've closed my heart to the world around me, it's because there was a lot of hurt, a lot of suffering, a lot of fear that I'll be hurt again, or the inability to believe that even if I get hurt again, that I would be able to get back up. And I imagine that people who have become so closed off to society or other people, they've had that experience a plethora of times. And so, again, I think it's my responsibility taking these ingredients into that space to show this other person that life is rough. People are different. I am always changing. But if I can challenge myself to keep my heart so open that it embraces this other person's closed heart, that, again, with time and my unrelenting spirit to continue engaging with them, I would like to hope that I can, again, be one role model to this person of, you know, there's more out there in the world than maybe you're allowing yourself to see. And yeah, I guess to sum up what I'm trying to share is, as long as I have conviction in the three ingredients I bring into the space, I feel like even if someone steps into that space with their own ingredients, which are completely different, it will still be a value creative, beautiful opportunity to just remember the differences and similarities that we can share with one another vulnerably if we just trust that process, I guess.
Wow, that was great, Bree. Thanks for sharing. I really resonate with the aspect of you having the ability to bring in like the quality or ingredient of dialogue and then really embracing the other person. And I was thinking about what you shared, Lillian, about how, what do you do if the other person is not engaged? And throughout the pandemic, you know, there have been many times where I like go out and I don't want to talk to anyone and I don't want to be engaged. But on the flip side, like, because it is an important quality for me to want to be in a dialogue, I think I feel disengaged when I think that other people don't want to talk to me. But then when I meet someone who wants to like engage in dialogue, then I like immediately, even when I'm in such a state of I don't want to engage with anyone, if someone else reaches out, I feel like, oh, this is safe. Like I want to talk to this person. So that excitement kind of comes out. And then of course, you know, people bring up topics that maybe you don't agree with, and immediately you can like go back and shut down and become disengaged. Like, okay, enough, I don't want to talk about this. And then, you know, people could choose to walk away. But I think we can really have confidence in the belief that if we do our best to bring these qualities and, you know, listen to the other person and try to create this space that we feel would be safe for others, then, you know, we can welcome them into continued dialogue. And I also think it was so great that both of you shared these examples of sustained dialogue, that maybe those, you know, amazing dialogues and those dialogues where you were able to really grow, those came out of like a bunch of mini dialogues where, you know, sometimes maybe you were upset at your friend or upset at your dad. So yeah, I think it's like with these qualities, we don't have to 100% have them all the time, but we can go in with like a little bit at a time and then continue to build on that.
Thank you, Henri. Thank you, Bree. I really feel like I'm realizing how important it is sometimes to reflect on and even put a name to like these feelings or these ingredients, if you will. I think before reflecting on this activity, I didn't realize what was really important for me. And then to be able to talk about it like this, I think, yeah, it just helps when you go into an interaction, realizing like why you're feeling the way that you feel and how to sort of reorient yourself. And I love even pre you thinking about like the opposite of your ingredients and realizing at one point you experienced the other side too, and like why you're there. And then how did you even go from like maybe despair to hope or lack of courage to courage, you know? So that I think helps us empathize more with others too. So yeah, for the listeners, please think of your own ingredients and, you know, please share it with us too. We'd love to hear from you all.
As we reflected on our own ingredients, we thought it was a great opportunity to think about what kind of ingredients are important to us as a center. We were really inspired by an article on our website on Mr. Ikeda's Foundational Ideas for Genuine Successful Dialogue, written by our publications associate, Mitch Bogan, and informed by the center's 2018 book, Peace Building Through Dialogue. In the article, Mitch goes over four key points. The first point to having genuine dialogue is to avoid prejudging and categorizing people in ways that close off opportunities for growth, understanding, and peace. Mr. Ikeda says, "In order to achieve mutually enriching, deeply connecting dialogue, we need to overcome the divisions within our own hearts that make us unconsciously categorize people and rank their value on that basis." The second point has to do with the prospect and nature of change, which is based on this idea in Buddhism that nothing is permanent, and the nature of our engagements with others in our environment can be a determining factor in what emerges at any point. The third point explores the question of idealism and realism. For some people, peace through dialogue might seem idealistic, but for Ikeda, it is the most authentically realistic path to changing society. The fourth and last point has to do with a central concept of Mr. Ikeda's called human revolution. One of his most well-known quotes is, "A great human revolution in just a single individual will enable a change in the destiny of all humankind." For Mr. Ikeda, dialogue enables us to undergo this human revolution or inner transformation. So with every outer dialogue, our own inner dialogue is equally important. After we read the four points together, I asked Henri and Pri which ones resonated the most with them.
The second point you read, Lillian, really resonated with me at first. I also realized for me it was like linked to point number one, too. Point number two really resonated with me because I think in the ways that I maybe grew up and the ways that I feel comfortable, I want things to kind of be put into boxes. although that's not the way that we should see the world, and it kind of prevents us from growing. But for me, like, you know, what's right is right, what's wrong is wrong. Or, you know, if someone said this thing and they hurt me, I don't want to talk to them anymore. Or yeah, I've based a lot of my decisions kind of with that attitude. And reading this point about the prospect and nature of change, and in Buddhism, you know, the resistance to the notion of any of us having a fixed identity. For me, sometimes, even as I figure out who I am, I get really attached to like the things that I identify with, and I feel like I have to be this way. You know, if I liked this thing when I was younger, like, this is what I have to continue to like. But I think that having the reminder and openness to realize that we can change. We can say one thing one day and then, you know, learn something new and then have another opinion the next day. Like, that's all right. And that's encouraged. It should be that way, since we're always learning new things. And I think that seeing myself in that way also allows me to see others in that way and not judge them. So going back to point number one, kind of not putting people in certain categories and saying like, this is the type of person they are, so I'll never get along with them, or we have nothing in common because they're this way. I think these points are such great reminders that maybe we disagree on certain things, but there's commonalities that we can agree on. And I'll just share one example that really like stuck out to me in the way that I responded to someone. And it was actually through social media. So I was Facebook friends with an acquaintance from many, many years ago. And, you know, I haven't seen her in a long time and I haven't talked to her in a long time, but sometimes I see like posts about her family or about things that she's doing. And, you know, for the most part, I've really enjoyed them. But a few years ago, she had posted something that really made me feel hurt in my own identity. And immediately, like, I wanted to like report her posts and I wanted to block her and not be her friend. And, you know, online, it's easy for us to do that. We can just shut them out and don't have to deal with them anymore. But I also remember seeing like the joyful posts that I appreciated seeing that gave me like happiness. And I realized in that moment that my emotional reaction was like, I just wanted to disengage with her and not, you know, communicate at all. And then I also thought about like, if I had a dialogue, you know, how would I reach out? Would I be defensive? And would I respond to this post saying like, you know, this made me feel this way? And I didn't end up reaching out to her, but I do reflect on that a lot, thinking that, do I do this in my day-to-day life with the people that I do see? You know, do I judge someone right away and write them off? And how can I not do that so that I can really get to know somebody and figure out why they ended up with the belief that they did? So anyway, that example came up as I read this like nature of change too, because I also think that if I, you know, blocked her and didn't want to engage with her anymore, I take away that ability for, you know, for her potential to really grow and learn and maybe learn about how I felt in that moment.
Thank you, Henri. As I was listening to your response and just revisiting the 4 points again, I think they all very much resonate with me. And I try to reframe the question for myself and think about how, which one I've been thinking about more than the others, which in the past week has been point three, Mr. Ikeda exploring the question of idealism and realism. And the first thing I did was I Googled what is idealism, what is realism, just to make sure that, you know, my understanding of it is what it was. But essentially, you know, coming out with this understanding that idealism focuses on what could be and realism focuses on what is. And I think similar to things I highlighted earlier of concepts being on two sides of the same coin, I think Mr. Ikeda exploring the question of idealism and realism is to encourage us to see that they're kind of one and the same. And I say this because when I think of an idealist, there might be an impression that they're perceived to be risky or more positive thinkers because they're envisioners, you know, envisioning the future, envisioning something that's not here. And then with realists, I feel like they're very grounded in their present moment and they might be perceived to be neutral and sometimes even less hopeful because they're so rooted in like, this is the world around me and I see it very clearly. But when I think of the values that they both espouse, I feel like I need to be both if I want to see difference or if I want to really be a part of the change that I wish to see in the world. And so I was thinking about like, what bridges idealism and realism? I feel like if I was just an idealist and I was only focusing on what could be, there's a part of me that can see how that might not be backed with action. I can be so caught up in these ideals that there might be a part of me that just won't take action to implement how to get there. Whereas with realism, if I was a realist only, I can see how, you know, I get a better grasp of what's around me, a better grasp of my role in the world around me, and which that is great. But if I'm so caught up in just what's around me and not really looking towards the future, I think it's also so easy with time and maybe with more obstacles to not feel like there could be more. And so then when I put the two together, it's like, oh, the beauty of being able to espouse both idealism and realism is that you can, like, you need to be able to have hope and envision the future, but you also need to be grounded in the present. And for those two things to come together, I think it's like the action piece. I need to be able to act on my strong ideals in a way that's realistic to the world around me. And I think that's where dialogue comes in, because I can think of one thing, but then I could talk with another person and they might have a completely different ideal that can also so beautifully pave the way for a world with the absence of violence or, you know, just so many other things we're confronting. And so, yeah, to be able to balance these two concepts, I think, gives us this reassurance that things can always get better in a way that's not far removed from our reality, but also gives us that space to kind of still dream. When I was thinking about this concept, I thought a lot about Rosa Parks. And like, if I was Rosa Parks sitting in the back of the bus, and I'm sure there are many people at that time having all these thoughts of like, I wish the world was better. I wish I didn't have to be conscientious of how to be because I'm seen as less than or seen as just someone not worthy of respect. And so I could have all these thoughts, right? But then I could also have all these fears that leave me sitting at the back of the bus. And when I think of Rosa Parks' bold action to finally like speak out for justice, I think she was being both an idealist and a realist, because it's like, being a Black woman myself, I'm so grateful that she had the courage to be like, this reality sucks. And I know we deserve so much more as just other people on the planet. And also, this is what I see. And for her to be able to do what she did, I think was she was able to bridge her reality with this better vision of the future. And yeah, and that allowed opportunities for other people to be more authentically themselves and really fight for that better world that maybe to many it seemed impossible because they were just in their own minds. If we're alive, there's always, kind of similar to what Henri was sharing before, things that can still change. And because that is the constant, that both my life and the lives around me, the world around me, is in a constant state of flux, I have to have strong conviction in my ability to navigate my being an idealist and my being a realist through dialogue.
Thank you so much, Pri. That was awesome. And Henri, I had so many thoughts too when you were sharing about the nature of change, especially as it relates to people in my life or in the world that I think will never ever change. You know, so it was just such a great reminder. And Pri, when you were talking about realism and idealism, thank you so much for that example of Rosa Parks. And it reminded me of your ingredient of hope. And I realized like, oh, like hope is such a great way to bridge those two. Like we have to be realists in the sense of like understanding and embracing who we are in this very moment, but then to not kind of lose sight of the things we also are looking forward to or want in our life. And if we have hope, we can use our reality to also like move forward. So I just was thinking about that as you were sharing. And yeah, maybe this is a great segue into our next question, because both of you spoke about points that I think we're maybe struggling with as a society right now. Like Henri, you know, you talking about recognizing that like any moment we can change for the better or for the worse, or maybe it's back and forth, and just based on our own individual experiences, like to be able to accept each other for who we are. And I think right now there's so much divide in our society, or it's so easy to sort of decide one person is this way and the other person is that way, and I'm just going to sort of continue on my own path without reaching out to the people in our life that make us uncomfortable. And I was just thinking, even, for example, if there's like a particular public figure or politician that I think, wow, I would never want to talk to this person because they will never change. I was thinking when you were sharing, would I want somebody to think that about me? Like maybe someone that I interacted with years ago and I maybe regretted the way I treated them. Would I want them to think like, oh, Lillian will never change? So it just kind of encouraged me to not think that way, even about someone who I feel like is, yeah, doing something that I really don't agree with or that really, that hurt me in some way. And then Pri, your point about just like, how do we use our current reality to continue dreaming and to have hope in our dreams? And yeah, I think with everything happening in our world right now, I was wondering if based on these 4 points, you know, how do you think our families or societies and just our world at large could change if people were aware of these points more and could practice them? Maybe there's specific examples that you can think of. I was wondering if you've given thought to that too.
Well, I just want to jump in and respond to what you said, Lillian, because it made me really think about the power of really believing in others' potentials. When you said, like, if you feel like someone doesn't believe in your potential to change, I feel like my immediate instinct will be like, I'm going to hold close to my identity and not change because you believe that, you know, about me. So like these, like putting up walls of like, if you don't believe in me, you know, I'm not going to change the way that I am, you know? And anyway, I just thought of that and how, like, related to your question of how would society change, that if more people could embrace this idea that we, you know, we're all learning, we're all growing. And as we share and build these relationships with one another, and if we can allow ourselves the room to grow, then we can live in these societies that are always evolving. And like Priya was sharing with the example of Rosa Parks, like, even though that seemed like to be the rigid society that wasn't going to change, and of course progress is still like slower than we would like, but to be able to know that there is potential for that change, and that will be like the only way that we can like take one more step forward, because otherwise, you know, you do lose hope if you just feel like things are just rigid and never going to evolve. So I do see that as, you know, the more that we can just believe in one another, I think there will continue to be able to have hope for the future, and especially for, I think, the younger generations as well.
In response to that, Henri, I think we're circulating this quote from Mr. Ikeda when he says to have faith in the promise of dialogue is to have faith in the promise of humanity. And what you said just sort of helped me understand that quote, in that when we have dialogue, you know, we are essentially like challenging ourselves to deepen our belief in each other and in ourselves.
Oh, wow, this is like mind-blowing, because I feel like as you both were talking, it just made me think about how we're in an age where everyone's dying to have dialogue, but they don't know how to do it. I think there's just so many understandings of like the definition of what dialogue is that we kind of end up talking about how to have dialogue rather than actually having the dialogue. And so as I was kind of thinking of the connection between dialogue and peace, it also reminded me that anytime I don't feel peace, it's when I haven't been able to speak my mind or share the things that have been troubling me, both at the individual and societal level. It's anytime I feel like I have thoughts and experiences that I know are valid, but no space for that to be held for what it is, without it being criticized or broken apart into like what of my experience is real or not real. And, you know, I think we just live in a very, you know, when I think about like the cancel culture that exists in our world, we're just so quick to be like, your experience is invalid because of this privilege that you have, or your experience is more valid because of this privilege you don't have, or, you know, there's just all these very nuanced conversations that not many people take that extra step to go, wait, let's actually sit in a room together and like start at the most fundamental basic aspect of how do you feel. Hold space for that, then discuss, you know, what's our reality, and then come back again to then discuss how do we make sure we don't feel left behind as we really open up our lives and be vulnerable. And I guess it does go back to the seeing the potential for change in the other person as much as we see the potential for change in ourselves. Because when I'm suffering from a place of, you know, not seeing my own potential, it's so easy for the world around me to also look like, I mean, this is it, like nothing else is going to happen. And so if everyone's thinking like that, I can easily see how that's an environment where there's like no dialogue. Whereas if we're all feeling like, oh, change is possible, I feel like we would be more open to just pulling up a chair and being like, hey, this is on my mind. Can I just get your thoughts? You know, regardless of what's wrong or right, like, let's just talk about it. And yeah, it's this whole interview is just making me think of how much more dialogue I want to engage in, even in just realizing that, especially lately, I've been engaging in less, maybe because of this fear that I can't have the kind of dialogue that I know Mr. Ikeda is promoting. But like, there's no can't. We can do this. It's just whether we do it or not. And yeah, so I think a world without dialogue is a violent one, because everyone's just like not being held for who they are, and also don't know how to hold space for others for who they are. And of course, that breeds conflict, because everyone's just feeling like they're not seen, that they're not recognized.
I just thought, like, yeah, how can we believe that our whole society will change if we can't even believe that the person in front of us will change, or even ourselves, I guess. So yeah, as cliche as it sounds, you know, like really one by one, it's like, if you can believe and see a transformation in yourself or in other people around you, then I think more and more we'll be hopeful that the whole world has that potential as well.
What you're both sharing reminded me of this quote from Mr. Ikeda's 2016 peace proposal. And he says that society as a whole has seen a lessening of our capacity to appreciate others as they are and for who they are. And he says, I believe that the surest way to change this is by carefully attending to the stories of each other's lives through one-on-one dialogue. Mm. And I when I think about that, when I read this like a week or so ago, Henri, I was thinking about it, like, as he said, society as a whole. But then I think about, you know, reflecting on what you shared, the people in my life that I struggle to appreciate as they are and for who they are. And then, like, how much have I challenged myself to carefully attend to the stories of their lives, you know? And yeah, just, I haven't, you know, so there's, it just makes me feel like, well, there's something I can do today, you know, to really change that. Yeah, there's so many things I can do, so many people I can reach out to. So yeah, thank you both so much for this dialogue and all of the ones we've had. So today, to wrap up our episode, I thought I could ask you both to read a little bit. I know we usually ask for a piece of advice, but we've been, you know, reading this foreword by Mr. Ikeda in the book we referenced earlier, Peace Building Through Dialogue. And I think when we were preparing for the episode, you both found like so many gems in there. So I thought maybe we could share them with our listeners, and yeah, just some food for thought for us as we conclude our dialogue today.
I agree. There were so many in here, and I'm wondering if we chose the same one. So it will be a surprise.
That'd be so funny.
dun, dun, dun.
Yeah, I really loved this part, lessons from Elise Boulding, that Mr. Ikeda, you know, references Elise Boulding and says that for many years, Elise Boulding, remembered as the mother of peace research, warmly extended her support to the Ikeda Center. She reminded us that the creation of a culture of peace begins from our own effort to listen to others, that when we lend our ears to opposing opinions, this can bring to light the hidden essence of things, enabling us to grasp the core aspect of an issue. She considered listening to be the exemplary practice of the peace builder. I really appreciated this reminder that our own growth really happens through hearing other people. That helps us kind of reflect on our own experiences as well. So it's not just about like giving space and listening to like, okay, this is your story as it is, but like you're sharing with the one-on-one dialogue and the ability to really just kind of put that into context of like our own stories, maybe to better understand ourselves. And, you know, if not ourselves, like just like what's happening around us and where we fit into that context. So I think really listening to others gives us this tremendous opportunity for growth, and that contributes to cultures of peace. So that's something that I really want to practice more of, not just like hearing somebody's story and being like, oh, I appreciate that, but really wondering what that means, you know, and how does that fit into my own experience, and how can I transform based on this, you know, this new story that I've heard.
It's so funny because I literally chose the passage right above it. It says the spirit of mutuality is an essential component in the kind of creative dialogue that the center seeks to advance. Without mutuality, attempts at dialogue will constitute only dry and lifeless exchanges of words. We should heed the concern shared with me by Jim Garrison, past president of the John Dewey Society, that, quote, many times what appears to be a dialogue is actually a soliloquy because neither party is listening, end quote. Many of the thinkers with whom I have engaged over the years concur that the key elements that make dialogue fruitful are respect for the other and the humility to listen to and learn from perspectives different from one's own, which is the passage that introduces the one Henri just read right now. But for myself too, I really feel like since working here at the Ikeda Center, and also since I've been more intentional with how dialogue looks in my daily life, I do know that I do my best at listening. Also, I can see that that's a skill that still needs to be refined, because I think there are various things that make it hard to listen. You know, again, speaking to things like if I don't feel heard or seen, or something I haven't mentioned, you know, if my ego is inflated, you know, we just perceive or hear things differently. And this passage, or just this theme of listening, reminds me that something I want to do even at the individual level is to listen to my heart more. What am I feeling? How am I understanding what I'm feeling? If I listen to that too, then I can be able to step into a space with another person to be able to listen that much more, because it wouldn't be coming from a place of still trying to figure myself out as I listen to this other person, but it would be this experience of really sharing my time, my energy, my presence with someone else who's also just trying to figure themselves out too. So yeah, I think we can never listen enough. So yes, thank you.
Thank you, Pri, and thank you, Henri. It's amazing you picked exactly the same section of this forward, and it makes me think we should do an episode on listening maybe the next time you guys come back. Yeah, the last sentence in the foreword, Mr. Ikeda says, I conclude this foreword with my earnest wishes that this book will be just one of many endlessly expanding sessions of dialogue. And so I hope this episode can serve that same purpose for both of us and for everybody that tuned in today. So yeah, thank you both so much again for joining us, and I look forward to having you back again soon.
Thank you for tuning in to the Dialogue Studio today. I hope you enjoyed my dialogue with Henri and Pri, and perhaps you are thinking about your own ingredients as well. If you want to read more about our recent virtual dialogue nights or Mr. Ikeda's ideas for genuine dialogue, we've included links in the episode description. If you're interested in learning more about the Ikeda Center for Peace Learning and Dialogue, you can visit our website at ikedacenter.org or follow us on social media at Ikeda Center. Also, don't forget to email us at podcast@ikedacenter.org if you have any questions or would like to share any of your dialogue stories with us. Thank you, everyone, and happy dialoguing!